Okay, good morning, everybody. Welcome to another New Energy Chinwag with Charlie Ratton and myself, John Massey. Charlie, I'll let you introduce this morning's, as it was a subject that you wanted to talk about. So, yeah, off you go.
We've talked a lot about hydrogen in the last 18 months or so, John, and our listeners will have heard. Why is everybody talking about hydrogen, offshore wind, hydrogen revisited? We've talked with Amy Gaffer of the Manchester Fuel Cell Innovation Centre about hydrogen. But I think one of the things that struck me is the sheer amount of momentum now under the around the subject. And a lot of that momentum appears to be coming from Germany, big industrial powerhouse. Got a leadership role within the EU. And I think yesterday the headline that struck my attention, largely because I like headlines of this kind of nature, but it said that there should be a Cape Canaveral for hydrogen in Germany. So I thought my first question to you would be, well, if there was to be a Cape Canaveral for hydrogen in Germany, what would that mean to you? What would that encompass? Is it realistic? What would the constituent parts of it be? And what would the ramifications of such a bold policy objective be?
Well, it depends. I don't really know what they meant by Cape Canaveral.
I suppose Cape Canaveral, to my mind, the image that conjures up is of a giant space facility in Florida with a lot of money thrown at it. With obviously, Cape Canaveral was the base for the Apollo moon landings. And it's on an epic scale. I think it's 10 miles by 10 miles, 100 square miles plus, with all the scientific backups and apparatus. Of course, the Apollo moon landings were done on hydrogen, so it would be not as fanciful perhaps as it sounds. But I suppose I think it came from the German research minister, so you can see why she might be lobbying for this. But I think it would be the scale of it would be the thing. It would be a national endeavour. It would be on an epic scale, almost seismic scale, and that the push would be something similar to the moon landings 50 or so years ago achieved on hydrogen, as we know. So I think that's what she's lobbying for. So she said that we should have a Cape Canaveral for hydrogen, and it should be in Germany. So the scale of it would be almost a national endeavour, and it would bring in the finest brains, and you engage with the supply chain, and you engage with science, and you engage with industry, and that Germany would be the leader. So that's as I understand it. What would your views on that?
I guess in that sense, it's a centre of excellence, really. Centre of trying to be the cutting edge, maybe. I guess cutting edge in terms of technology development, which you can then use for other things. I suppose it's the classic non-stick frying pan thing, isn't it? That's developed. Well, I don't know if that's true, but things developed from the space industry that again go into everyday life. I suppose from what you've described, that would be my reading of what they'd have in mind. Is you develop a centre of excellence, you attract research money, but in particular you take what you develop and what you learn and then turn it into exports and turn it into other products and turn it into you sort of generate money on the back of it. So I mean, in that sense, Cape Canaveral is one. It's kind of a launch site, isn't it? But I suppose it's all the other. It's the technology development, I suppose, and the being at the forefront that goes around it, I guess, would be what they mean. Whether does that translate to hydrogen? Probably, you could argue that you might only need a Cape Canaveral. It might make sense for NASA because you're not kind of launching things into space sort of every second. But for a country the size of Germany, would you have one Cape Canaveral, or are they looking at an industry that's big enough that you could have several Cape Canaverals? I suppose that would be my only question.
Yeah, actually, that's very interesting because I did bash a few lines together and put them out on yesterday. Usually it might be with a degree of incredulity of such an ambitious objective, but actually there was quite a lot of rational, reasoned response. And basically some of it said, look, if Germany's got one, we should have a Cape Canaveral. So perhaps the UK should have similar ambitions, which given that we've only just had high deploy one, a few little safety tests, but perhaps that is part of the thing that we're coming to, that actually if you were to think of a hydrogen economy, we've discussed this in the past, not just about using it for a little niche here and there, but actually to have the whole economy based around it, or intrinsic elements of hydrogen within it, then one way of propelling yourself to that objective is to do it big, is to do it bold. I mean, we've talked about clusters, haven't we? This would be another a mega cluster, I suppose.
Yeah, that's what I suppose to my mind, it's kind of any of the clusters we've talked about could lay a claim to wanting to be the next Canaveral, or to be a, if you like, to be a centre of excellence, to be somewhere where you're developing these things and then selling on what you've learned, selling the IP, developing IP, selling on that IP. I guess one of the differences between this and a kind of, I don't know, we're probably stretching the Cape Canaveral analogy, but I mean, there's only kind of, there aren't many alternatives if you're launching things into space. The issue, I guess, as to whether you, if you, whether you want to go down that line with hydrogen depends on, yes, your view as to, is it something that should be a national endeavour, given that there are always other ways to do the things that we're talking about with hydrogen, or is it something that you should leave to clusters to prove the case themselves? If they can prove the case and if they can do it, then yes, support it and give support to help them prove the case. But is it something that is as a national endeavour you would actually push? I don't know. I'll come back to different countries and what their strategy is regarding not just hydrogen but also other things. Because then what you'll get is from the other side, you'll get the technologies competing with hydrogen saying, "Well, why can't we be a why can't we have a Cape Canaveral for I don't know heat pumps or EVs or whatever else it may be."
It's quite a graphic image, isn't it? This Cape Canaveral. I think it shows what the epic scale. I mean, it will be only a matter of time before people start saying, "Look, offshore wind has had a sector deal. We won." But I suppose offshore wind took 20 years to get to that, and it had to go through some pain. It wasn't an easy trajectory from where it was. It was ridiculed. People said it would never work. It would certainly never be an industry. The grid couldn't take it. The grid, you name it, and it was mentioned. And it proved a lot of the doubters wrong.
Well, in particular, it had to prove that it could be cheap. With offshore wind, I mean, even 3 or 4 years ago, the big objection to throwing lots of support behind offshore wind was that it was too expensive. And so what the industry managed to do was to prove that they could build it a lot cheaper. And on the back of that, suddenly policymakers have sat up and thought, well, actually, it's a lot cheaper. People prefer it because it's miles offshore and they can't see it. So we'll throw our weight behind it. So I mean, maybe the same, you could argue the same process might have to be gone through for hydrogen. That before government says, right, we're going to throw our entire weight behind it, they might want to see something, some results first. They might want to see cost reduction. They might want to see, they might want some proof that it can scale up, that it can be cost effective, before going down that kind of whole national strategy thing. I mean, that would be following the offshore wind example, I guess.
Yeah, I wonder if it'd be fanciful, perhaps, if you describe Grimsby as the Cape Canaveral of offshore wind.
Yeah.
But it is on an epic scale. I've driven around the docks, and you're driving around for miles, and everybody's there. These SOV vessels are.
I'm sure they love it on their sign, as you would.
But it's already said Great Grimsby on some of the signs. You can see the attraction. But thinking a little bit behind some of the drivers for Germany, because it's not in isolation this year, it's a dramatic headline, and she's captured my attention and indeed others. But thinking a bit, we both teach, and we've been both involved in the Hydrogen World Leaders course for the Green Power Academy. And during the course of that teaching, we've both alighted upon similar big joined-up schemes that have caught both of our attentions in the course of the course. One of them is a thing called West Custer. And the West Custer is something of a joined-up scheme involving offshore wind and hydrogen, and it seems to be scalable, and it seems to be big. So there does seem to be some appetite, certainly in Germany and indeed neighbouring Netherlands, for large-scale hydrogen projects. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's two phases, isn't it? There's a small phase to begin with, the objective of which is to prove whether or not it is scalable, and then there's a big phase in theory planned after that. So, I mean, I think there's a certain appetite for big project announcements and big project plans, and I would say part of that is that if you do want to attract big amounts of money from policymakers and big support from policymakers, it helps to aim big. If you just sort of go to them with a few kind of piddly little projects, they're going to be like, well, so what? So I think there's an element of that. The headlines each day are kind of, mine's bigger than yours to some extent. And I think that's part of the reason. I think there's an element of kind of lobbying and an element of kind of, look, this can be big. Look at the size of project we're doing, which to try and persuade policymakers that this is something they should get behind in a big way. And they're starting to see progress, I think. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt that we're going to see policy which helps hydrogen and helps its scale. But yeah, how that then translates to, it'd be interesting to see how that translates to national, because I mean, national policies certainly differ, I think. I mean, in Germany, there's been talk about importing hydrogen from North Africa, for example. Whereas in the UK, there's no kind of firm policies, but certainly in the climate change report, when they were talking about hydrogen, one of the things they wrote was that they thought it sensible to develop hydrogen in a way that didn't involve imports, that didn't, as they put it, decrease energy security. So it'd be interesting to see how Germany goes along those lines, whether they're looking at developing completely internal hydrogen production, how much they're going to depend on imports. There's also a big debate, obviously, going on in Germany around green versus blue hydrogen as well, I think. I think that's fair to say, although they're not a gas producer, so maybe not. Maybe that would just, again, the gas would be imported, or they'd have to buy it from the Netherlands or buy it from Norway or whatever. So I think that'll be an interesting debate in Germany. Can you become a Cape Canaveral, for example, if your primary product is coming from somewhere else? Is an interesting question.
Yeah, there's a lot in there, and I've seen a few things that are worthy of comment there. One, I've seen some quite advanced proposals, at least, for some kind of hydrogen grid in the Ruhrgebiet around Essen and going right into Holland and right up to Rotterdam and places like that, but certainly also in the energy cluster and hydrogen cluster domain. So I'd probably link Germany and the Netherlands together for the purposes of the Ruhr. I've also seen more dramatic, and there's this strange 40 by 2040 kind of proposal, which is there kicking about, and it's some quite dramatic imagery in there. We've talked about glossy brochures, and this certainly comes to a rather dramatic piece, but that seems to show hydrogen networks extending as far as the UK, to Scotland, to the Nordic countries, to Africa, you've mentioned, and as far as the Ukraine, right down to Africa indeed. Some of the pipelines, I believe, are already there, but that's the scale of the ambition, and most of it does seem to centre around German ambition. And of course, Germany and the EU are inextricably linked. If there is to be some kind of future vision for the EU, I suggest that one of the ways it will be German and perhaps French driven, Netherlands as well, and this would be some kind of blueprint. Whether that would then centre around Germany, and in the middle of it you'd have this Cape Canaveral idea at some place. It might be Essen or some German. Cape Canaveral's on the coast, isn't it? So you might want to look towards a coastal area. Perhaps some of the islands there have been mentioned as in relation to hydrogen as well. But what it does strike me is how ambitious some of the political discussion is. Admittedly, that's not the same as delivering realistic projects. And I suppose we've touched upon the elephant in the room, of course, is that hydrogen comes in at 4 times the cost of methane. So that's an argument that sooner or later, the argument who pays for this Cape Canaveral or this gas grid or the whole lot, who's going to foot the bill?
Yeah, I mean, I guess an interesting difference in Germany compared to here is that what happens in Germany will very much be tied in with what happens on a European-wide basis, whereas we'll much more be doing our own thing. So yeah, you're right. You could still have Germany could still plan to be a big centre for hydrogen, whatever you want to call it, excellence, growth, scale, technology, and then tie that in with what neighbours are doing. You could have different centres of excellence. I mean, the Netherlands could become a centre of excellence for one part of the chain, like, I don't know, hydrogen from natural gas. Norway could become a centre of excellence for carbon capture and storage. Germany could be a centre of excellence for, I don't know, fuel cell technology or whatever they chose to do. So what you might see on a European level, I guess, is different, almost different Cape Canaverals, if you like, for different, because hydrogen's quite a long, complicated supply chain. So Maybe you wouldn't be a Cape Canaveral for just hydrogen. You might be a Cape Canaveral for whatever bit of that, of the hydrogen kind of value chain, supply chain, whatever you want to call it, you are. Again, I don't know. Is Cape Canaveral a centre of excellence just for kind of launching things? I mean, there are places like Stevenage just up the road from here.
No, I think there's a whole industry.
Technology, for example.
I think there's ops, there's maintenance, there's research. As I say, it's on a vast scale. It's almost like the size of a country. And they thought big right from the outset, and they funded it accordingly. It was a national endeavour. Whether a national endeavour for heat pumps would grab the same I'm not convinced by, but I suppose the cost. I mean, you could imagine certainly one of the centres of excellence would be a cost reduction cluster, which has already been achieved perhaps elsewhere in offshore wind. Which surprisingly is the offshore wind. I suppose that cluster model is now being, and the way they go about engagement and the way they go about local content will form, I'm sure, a part of the debate. It's not fanciful. This is being debated at the very highest levels in Germany with quite a tight timescale. And some of the background tea leaves that we both track, I suppose, are that it does seem to be attracting all party support, and that people are buying into it. And industrialists on a day-to-day basis, the southern German car makers, for example, it's all very well to have a hydrogen, but you need to get it down to the south of Germany. It's not a case of just the ports where the offshore wind might come in. So there'll be a transport element and the network we've just mentioned. So this network to Essen perhaps needs to carry on and go further south, or perhaps we'll use the River Rhine. I don't know. We'll perhaps use an LNG thing. But the vision does seem to be emanating from Germany, and it seems to have got a buy-in from industrialists and the southern industrialists and the greening of. And it seems to have a strong green element as well. Sometimes I'm a bit suspicious. Oh, yes, we'll have this hydrogen network, but it will actually be blue or even grey hydrogen. But they do seem to be going almost from the green element from the outset. And as we both know, that's by far the most expensive option.
Yeah, most of what I've seen has been around green, either offshore wind in Germany itself, or as I say, they're talking about importing from North Africa. And I mean, it's expensive at the moment, but again, it depends how it scales, but if you look at projections for kind of the next decade, by the end of the decade, it may green is projected to be as cheap, if not cheaper in some places, as blue, certainly. Grey, obviously, well, blue and grey obviously depend on what happened to gas prices as well. I mean, I guess to go back to the stretch in the Cape Canaveral thing, I mean, the difference there, that was obviously entirely, as far as I know, entirely public funded. I mean, that's the taxpayer paying out for it. Offshore wind, of course, grew and managed to produce these clusters from private money, basically saying it just makes more sense to be in a cluster, to group things together and do things on a big scale in fewer places. I find it hard to believe that you're going to see the German taxpayer suddenly be on the hook for the entire costs of producing a German Cape Canaveral, or the same in the UK or Australia or wherever. I think what you'll see is you'll see policymakers kind of try and set frameworks that encourage that investment, to try and encourage that, those learning curves and those technology improvements and so on. But ultimately, it's going to have to be up to industry to make the case. So they can make the case to get some initial assistance, but it's ultimately going to down to the industry and private money to drive that forward. So if these things are going to appear, they're going to be private enterprises rather than kind of NASA, put it that way.
Yeah. A few things that fall out of that. Of course, Cape Canaveral, the National Endeavour came about because of rivals. They were, funnily enough, the Russians. Germany isn't really an oil and gas producing country, so I suppose it's not really on the hook for some of the liabilities. But if you look across to Holland, which certainly has some big oil and gas interests, and Norway as well, the agenda might be slightly different. But I wonder, we've talked in the past about the geopolitics of it, and you might want to say there's an energy independence, that the grid is falling to bits, that there's a climate change objective, and also the industrial offtake appetite might be there, certainly for the cost is right. The Ruhrgebiet is still industrial, and then the Germans have got a big manufacturing base, perhaps more so than other European countries. So it might be a good fit to take leadership. You might also say, well, actually, we've got some nascent clusters, at least, where we've got chemicals and we've got automotive and we've got pipes already and gas companies and some, there's some big German companies in that field. So actually you've got halfway, I wouldn't call it a Cape Canaveral, but you've got something that could be moulded into something, a hyper cluster, for want of these words, and that, that then could evolve into something much bigger, certainly if the siting was favourable.
Yeah, I mean, certainly I think there's lots of positioning to try and take leadership. Lots of countries are kind of looking at that and saying, well, okay, if this market does happen, if it does grow to the size that people think it might, then yeah, we want to be at the forefront of that. And in particular, we want to look at what our advantages are in terms of how can we turn that into revenue? How can we turn it into jobs? How can we turn it into exports and so on? And I'd say for different countries, that may mean different things. In some countries, it may mean not producing hydrogen or using hydrogen, but selling kit, producing fuel cells, producing electrolyzers, that kind of stuff. It's interesting to, I mean, looking at the oil and gas analogy, it'd be interesting to see how much money is actually in the hydrogen itself and how much money is in the downstream aspects of it, the utilization of it, the usage of it, the kit that uses it and so on. I'd certainly agree. I think Germany's obviously taking the position, if this is going to happen, we want to be at the center of it and we want to be one of the leaders of it, and other countries are doing as well, and as Europe potentially as a block is looking to do as well. I think also the geopolitics will certainly play in. Germany is obviously a gas importer and an oil importer rather than a user, so it's got some clear objectives to try and get away from that. So from an energy security point of view, if it can develop its own internal supply of energy from renewables, then great. And if hydrogen is part of helping extend that. And I think that's a key thing to say about many approaches to hydrogen. It's not to treat it as a completely separate industry, but it's to treat it as a way to actually extend and integrate renewables further into the system. So away from just electricity, but basically extend them into industry, transport, heat, whatever other bits and pieces we want to think about.
Yeah, there's a lot again in what you say that brings to mind that phrase sector coupling, which does seem to have brought people that we worked to wind industry certainly didn't used to speak to a great deal in the past. But again, a few other things that are coming from Germany, which doesn't have the oil and gas background, but it does have now this idea of bespoke offshore wind just for hydrogen. So that almost rewrites the rule book. When I used to do my EIAs and ESs for submission, the first line is a wind farm is for the production of electrical energy or something similar. And, you know, throwing that in the bin and replacing it with a wind farm could be a enabler for some kind of electrolysis on or offshore and the production of hydrogen. So it's wind farm too, with bespoke areas. We've seen some background tectonics in Germany where German state could be possibly buying into German grid to ease possibly the process. We talked about a big increase in the German offshore wind ambition, possibly because they're no longer constrained as much by grid and thinking about hydrogen. And then, of course, the other thing, we talked to with A. McGaffer a few weeks ago, and he said the world leader in hydrogen is actually China, which would bring you to this European bloc notion. In that, if hydrogen is to happen, we can't let the Chinese, as an entity, gain world leadership. At least we need to be in the game. And one way to do that is some kind of national endeavour to at least keep up with their. They were spending billions on hydrogen, I think he said, and undertaking a leadership as a result of that.
Yeah. I mean, it's the usual mix of things. I mean, the dedicated one's interesting because I guess the flip side of that, of course, is if you're using areas of seabed for hydrogen production, then those areas of seabed aren't available for electricity production. So the balance that's going to go on is, and one of the policy discussions that's going to have to go on is, to what extent do you risk stalling the decarbonisation of electricity, for example, if you're diverting resources into producing hydrogen? And there'll be a very big debate around which of those is the most sensible thing to do. The kind of, I don't know what, there must be a anecdote like throwing the baby out with the bathwater or whatever. There's, but what do, can you do, can you still do both, or do you slow down one area of decarbonisation which you've been very successful of to pursue another one to do something different?
So there will be some discussion around that. Yeah, they talk with Grid, and perhaps Grid would be a bit scared of going into certain areas, you know, to make these offshore hubs and all this. This is long burn stuff. This isn't going to happen in 6 months.
But
say, there's a whole heap of pipe works in that area that we could perhaps look at repurposing, or that pipe leads into that country. That might be a nascent kind of transmission type of opportunity. And so there might be that one site is better suited to electricity and one site is better generate something else on a site-by-site basis with seabed conditions, existing infrastructure. Well, the oil and gas people will know who those are. Strangely, not really for Germany, because it perhaps might come into Rotterdam or somewhere, or to Norway. Because I don't think the Germans have particularly German domestic oil and gas industry as such.
Yeah, you know, definitely that. I can see a situation where there'll be some sites where it's just doesn't make sense to do electricity, not necessarily for resource reasons, but as you say, logistics and export reasons, export of electricity, that is. I can certainly see some examples there. I think in terms, again, it's a matter of scale. There would certainly be some big debates in Germany, for sure, and elsewhere, I would have thought, if we talk about it here as well, about how much of your renewable resource do you give over to hydrogen production versus producing renewable electricity. I think that will be a massive, that's going to be a big debate, because it doesn't just affect, it's not just the production side of it, it goes all the way through to the end use side as well. So at the end user point, and it's back to our whole debate around electrification, at the end use point, do you want electricity or do you want fuel? That's the key driver behind a lot of this.
I suppose the insiders, and I suppose we both are clearly insiders, talk about this debate, will it be electrons versus molecules? What form is the energy? Is it going to be generated and transmitted and then used by the end user? But it does seem something of a quantum leap, if you were to take a step back, to certainly in the UK, where we've only just tested high deploy one, which was the, is it safe? To be going from that basis to, right, we're going to have a Cape Canaveral for hydrogen. Don't you think it's perhaps running before we can walk, to use another one of these aphorisms?
Yeah, it is. And I mean, I think, as I say, I think the kind of grand schemes are, having grand visions and grand schemes, I think, is important, because how do you persuade policymakers to make big national decisions unless you can point that it's something worth pursuing that ultimately is going to be big? But in the short, you've got to do both. I think there's going to have to be, I don't think they're going to commit to something without, and in a big way, without also seeing things happening on the ground on small steps. So you'll have to show some walking, and you'll have to show that as you walk, you've got the potential to run before you can actually to get enough support to run. If that was stretching lots of analogies there, and ultimately, again, it's like to go back to the sector deal. I mean, we've talked before about, we've had a sector deal for offshore wind, there's sector deals for all sorts of things like pharmaceuticals and other bits and pieces. So if hydrogen wanted a sector deal, which I suspect it probably would, the sector deal has to come from both directions. A sector deal isn't just kind of policymakers saying, wow, this looks great, have lots of help. It's also the industry also committing to doing a load of stuff from their side, and that is things around cost reduction, but also job creation, economic value, and all sorts of other bits and pieces. So I think, yeah, these things are going to have to develop in kind of lockstep to that extent.
Yeah, a lot in there again. I mean, if you were to take a detached view, you could actually argue that the European Green Deal is actually a sector deal. It does involve some of the things, and people are talking about local supply chain, all the stuff that we talk about for our offshore wind podcast, you know, the local content, local supplies, all this kind of thing, the engagement element of it will be almost baked in. And that's unusual, because this seems to have almost come organically from some of the clustering principles that have emerged from from offshore wind. And then you would take the steps. I suppose one of the things that we've talked about a few inducements, if you like, the carrot side of things. There might also be a stick. When you think back to the sticks here with rocks and some of the penalties involved for electricity companies. Look, if you don't do this, this is how much it's going to cost you, basically. And so that might just quantify your thinking, hold on, this can't carry on with methane because it's going to cost a lot more next year and a hell of a lot more in the coming years. And so that will then drive the business element as much from don't want to pay this tariff or engaging on the new one, which the cost differential will melt away to an extent. At least that's the projection.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to see a lot of this sort of proceeding without that stick, which effectively is carbon related, either carbon prices or European trading scheme mechanisms like price floors or permits or whatever it may be. So it's hard to see it proceeding without the stick, not just the carrot, because otherwise, as you say, it's just more expensive hydrogen than you can buy elsewhere. So I think that will be important. I mean the European deal. I mean, I think the whole issue about the local thing is the devil will be in the detail of that, because the next stage of that is that they now go into lots of arguing and haggling about who gets what money and where the money goes and which regions it goes to and all that kind of stuff. So which again, I guess, is why people come out and say, well, we'll be a Cape Canaveral of whatever, because that, again, there's an element of chasing of that debate and that whole lobbying effort. So partly, but that will very much be driven then again by tying it in, I guess, with where does the money need to go, both from the kind of economic side, the recovery side. It won't just be driven by the science or the technology. It'll be driven by the politics. It'll be driven by the economics and the tax revenue and all the other bits and pieces that go around it. So I think with the European, after that announcement, that the devil very much is in the detail now as to how that translates into actual amounts of money and where those amounts of money get spent. I think you'll see lots of regions coming out with plans and strategies and proposals that they become a centre of excellence for whatever else is in that deal, because it wasn't just hydrogen. I mean, hydrogen was a bit of it, but there were lots of other things in there around clean energy, around electric vehicles, around renewables and other bits and pieces. So where these things end up is going to be a lot about politics and a little bit about, if you like, science, resource and sense.
Okay. You talked a lot about the various strategies, and your electronic filing system is probably as bulging as mine is with the regional strategies, national strategies, roadmaps, you name it. They're everywhere. Everybody's coming out with them. So that begs the question. It was the German minister, the German research minister, that was calling for this Cape Canaveral. Why is it coming from Germany?
It's a good question. I guess because they are, as you say, I think partly because they've got a lot of these, what you call difficult to decarbonize industries. So I think hydrogen is going to be important for them in terms of those, the kind of heavy industry, refining, other bits and pieces, steel making, the various industries that are hard to decarbonize. So I think certainly to go down that route, Germany is going to have to use, it's going to have to look at things like hydrogen to do that. And if it's going to use it, it thinks, well, there's no point just using it, being a user of it, as with other things, as with car industry, as with turbine industry, as with whatever else. If we're going to be a user of an industry, we also want to be a supplier in that industry. So it makes perfect sense from that point of view. I don't know politically where we are in Germany in terms of, I don't know, are there elections coming up, for example? I mean, that kind of stuff will play into it. But also I think there's European money in the air. Now, Germany is obviously going to be a big contributor to that. If I'm a German taxpayer, I suspect what I don't want to do is to be a massive contributor to the EU budget and then see all that money, all that subsidy or grants or whatever form it ends up taking, being spent in Greece, Hungary, Poland, Portugal, wherever else. So again, I think there's obviously, there'll be some sound kind of economic and industrial reasons, and I think there'll obviously be a bunch of political reasons in there as well. I mean, they'll be interested in the money as much as anyone else will.
Okay, coming back to the analogy, this Cape Canaveral analogy, I suppose when Cape Canaveral was mooted, the problem hadn't been solved. They didn't know how to go to the moon. Nobody had ever done it.
Yeah.
So I think the idea was that we actually solve the problems as we go along. We don't know how to do it. We know there's something that we want to do, and we'll solve it as we go along. And I suppose that analogy would make sense because clearly hydrogen is a long way from being the economic underpinning of the European economy, from just a high deploy one at Keele University. Or the only place I can really see it working really is Orkney, which is on our own shores. And so why is Britain not claiming leadership and saying we should have this, and because we're the only ones that have made it work?
Yeah, I think some of the clusters are trying to do just that, aren't they? The Northwest and so on. By setting up those clusters, are hoping to become world leaders in deploying this stuff and learning lessons from it. And then presumably, as they learn lessons and develop solutions, flogging those to other parts of the world. So now, I guess the question is, why hasn't the UK energy minister stood up and done something similar? Well, let's wait and see. I think there is a hydrogen... I think, is it in the autumn, I think?
Yeah, there's some kind of review going on, isn't there?
Strategy. So there will be more to be said on hydrogen from the UK. It'll be interesting to see how that pans out. From what I've seen so far, the focus is very much on, and where the money's going in the UK from government on hydrogen has been very much targeted on specific industrial applications, things like steel and cement and other bits and pieces along those lines.
Yeah, it's much more organic. But thinking again to the Canaveral analogy, I suppose you know that it succeeded or not with Canaveral, don't you? If you do put a man on the moon, you say, well, I'm going to do it. So I suppose you need a target, all right? This is the equivalent. You can't just muddle along and then nobody know whether it's worked or not, or whether this idea is 60% successful, or it's met some of the objectives but not others, and we've not reached the whatever the state. I presume it's measurable. It'll be presumably phased time. You're not going to get the whole budget agreed. For this up front, and you'd have to show perhaps milestones, the things that business is used to, KPIs, milestones, deliverables, and all the rest of it. Yes, deliver. And the strategy that's closest to that is the Dutch hydrogen strategy, which is quite a pragmatic one, where you only proceed to stage two if you've proved that you can you've met stage one. And I suppose our own high deploy in the UK, where stage four is the national rollout, also is broken into bite-sized chunks. I suppose it doesn't have that headline grabbing Cape Canaveral element with all the things at the end of it. But like you say, perhaps that's a political dimension to tell a story. Sometimes from an engineering background, you forget that actually you need to engage with people, and people like a good story. And obviously the Apollo certainly seemed to grab people's attention, and everybody knew that I suppose it succeeded. So it wasn't without setbacks and all the things, and it certainly wasn't without expense.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess one of the challenges for hydrogen is, how do you set the target? Because going to the moon's easy. You kind of either 100% go to the moon or 0% go to the moon. There's no good saying we'll get 60% of the way there and then come back. But I mean, along the way, there were stages. I mean, they didn't land people at the first. They flew around the moon a few times, as far as I can remember. They obviously... I'm sure when they started, the first thing was to get something into orbit, and then they had to fly around the moon, and then eventually they landed on the moon, and then eventually they could do it again and again. I guess with hydrogen, it's the difference there is that, as I say, going to the moon, there was no competition because no one had done it before. The challenge that hydrogen has in terms of policy and in terms of target setting is that, how do you set a target? Because if you try and set a target of saying, well, we think 100% of gas heating should be hydrogen, then it's not that there's no other way to do that, because you've got a whole other industries looking at other ways that you don't need gas. So, I mean, in the low carbon heating consultation that closed recently, and I guess the results will be out over the summer, one proposal there was that new homes didn't need to be connected to a gas network at all, because you could use electrified heating, you could use heat pumps or whatever else to provide that heating. You can use solar to heat your hot water. There's various options to do that. So how do you set a target for a national target? Because whatever percentage you come up with, there's someone else that will say, well, you don't need to do it with hydrogen, you can do it with our solution instead. So the same with with transport. How do you set transport targets when there are other solutions out there? So that's one of the challenges I think that hydrogen has going in terms of setting targets. Now, there are some obvious targets you could set. I mean, you could say, well, 100% of current hydrogen usage, which is mainly refineries and ammonia and a few other bits and pieces, should be clean hydrogen rather than grey hydrogen. Now, I mean, that's an obvious target you could set, and if you're swapping hydrogen for hydrogen, then you can go 100%, and that should be a target. You should say, well, we shouldn't be using any grey hydrogen at all. It should all be clean hydrogen. So there's some, and again, with industry where there are things that are harder to replicate, I think it will be easier to set some of those targets. But I suppose the challenge from a kind of more general, this idea of a hydrogen economy more generally, is how do you set, how do you even start to set a target? Because are you saying a certain percentage of the entire economy should be? And then the question is, well, why? What are you basing that on? Or do you look at different sectors and say, well, a certain percentage of heating or a certain percentage of transport and a certain percentage of industrial should be hydrogen? And then, and as I say, it's different from going into space, because you've got other ways of doing these things. And so that's why you get into these arguments about which is best and which isn't.
Yeah, coming back to that point, because obviously if you're devoting your resources to a Cape Canaveral of Germany, and I imagine it's not going to come cheap, that means that somebody else isn't going to get the resources. So seriously, yeah. I think Germany is also wanting to attract Tesla. I'm sure I read about a big Tesla mega factory or whatever he calls them.
Yeah, they've already announced the next big.
So Germany would seem to want it both at the same time, and both presumably not going to come cheap.
And the UK, I think there was a story the other day about the UK were in discussions with Tesla to have a gigafactory here.
Yeah, I looked at one just 10 miles down the road in North Manchester, bizarrely. There was talk of one which fell through, but doubtless somebody will revive that at some stage. But it's from my point of view, based here in the northwest, a lot of it, this is on my doorstep. We're talking about the facilities down at Thornton and the cluster, the northwest cluster, which is certainly a front runner in the UK cluster reverse beauty studies, if you want to call it that. Okay, so we've discussed a lot today. There's this loss, and we've not really, I mean, it's perhaps when you start to probe, it's perhaps not as fanciful as perhaps as some of the initial headline grabbing sensationalism might indicate. Is there anything that you think we've not covered in relation to this, so what the German minister was getting at? The German minister of research, she said, look, if we want a Cape Canaveral for hydrogen, and we want it to be in Germany. So perhaps when you dig into it, perhaps there are reasons why she is talking along those lines. She's obviously an intelligent lady, and it's been met with quite a surprisingly positive response, certainly not ridicule.
Yeah, I think the summary of it is, I think the difference is that people want a Cape Canaveral that attracts money rather than one that they spend lots of public money on. I suppose that would be my summary. And so, I mean, my feeling is that there'll have to be a certain amount of support and a certain amount of public money. But a big difference is these are going to be, I mean, I think ultimately what you'll find is we might see clusters, and then certain clusters will develop into, if you want to call them, Cape Canaverals. I think this will be a bit more organic. I mean, that's not to say that you can't plan in advance. You can't have a strategy to that it makes perfect sense in certain areas to group these things together, for example, to reduce transport of hydrogen about. But I guess that would be my summary. The key difference is this is going to be governments putting in place the environment that enables the private sector to generate. It'd be more like a SpaceX than a NASA, put it that way. Private sector development of Cape Canaveral, if you want to call it that. And so it'd be a bit more organic. rather than the government saying, okay, here's a bunch of taxpayers' money, let's build, because we've got this single aim. And actually, I think it boils down to what you said. It's that the space race was a very clear single aim to do a thing 100%. Whereas with hydrogen, it's a much more kind of fragmented and segmented issue. And in different countries, it will be different as well. There'll be different countries will have different reasons to have more or less hydrogen in their system ultimately. So again, it will boil down to that. But I think ultimately, this is it's driven by wanting, if you're going to be a user of hydrogen, then you also want, I mean, that's the German example, you also want to be a developer of it, a developer of technology, a kind of owner, if you like, of parts of the value chain, an exporter of expertise, of equipment, of brain power, of intellectual property, and so on. So it's kind of it'll be, I guess, a more commercial version than a more kind of profit-driven version of Cape Canaveral, put it that way, be my kind of reading of how this might pan out.
Yeah, I think that's a good place to conclude our discussions today. We hope the listeners have enjoyed it. We always look forward to hearing their views, and if they've got subject ideas that they'd like us to have a go at, we'd be delighted to hear them. So certainly from me, it's thank you for listening.
Yeah, thanks everyone, and we'll see you next time. Okay, bye-bye.
Cheers, bye.